Do your feet sweat in work boots? If you struggle with sweaty feet, you need the best-selling Camel City Mill lightweight work sock. You'll have dry, comfortable feet as their sweat-wicking merino wool is 35% better at wicking moisture compared to polyester socks. Plus, a 10-year durability guarantee thanks to their proprietary Ironside Merino Wool and Nylon Fortified Heel and Toe. Your feet won't hurt and recover faster because of the compression in the arch and calf, which helps circulation through a full 14-hour shift. Expect all-day comfort, even with steel-toe boots due to the extra cushion in the toe. These socks are completely USA-made in North Carolina. Order ship within 24 hours, and anything over $50 ships for free. To get your socks today and see how insanely durable these socks actually are, go to CamelCityMill.com and use the code DIESEL15 and get 15% off your first order. Remember, use the code DIESEL15 for 15% off your entire order at CamelCityMill.com.
Hey guys, welcome back to Sweat and Grime. It's Brian. I'm here with
Rick.
Yeah, and we're coming back at you for episode 2 of the Sweat and Grime podcast. Still fumbling our way through this, trying to figure out what we're going to do.
But thanks for tuning in.
Absolutely. So, yeah, it's been a fun little week here. So, last week here in Michigan, we got a shitload of rain. And Rick and I were on a basement dig that what was it, 1,800 square foot? The size of the hole?
Yeah.
And it was about...
It was about 2,000 time you had to overdig.
Yeah, and then we were eight and a half feet deep.
On the high side, yeah.
Yeah, so with
so all... So we were excavating to finish grade on the high side.
Yeah, yeah. So all that to say, we had a big fucking hole in the ground, and then we got 4 straight days of rain here in Michigan, and that hole was filled to within probably 2.5 feet of the top.
Yeah, there was... 7 foot, about 80,000 gallons of water.
Yeah. In this nice brand new spanking basement. And so this week has been, so last week, we should back up. Last week during the storm, we were out there because we had to set septic tanks. And so yeah, we had 2 tanks.
We couldn't turn the delivery truck away.
No.
Because it was 2 weeks further out.
Yeah. So it would have set the project back by at least 2 weeks. So we're out there fucking around in all the mud and everything. We finally get it all dried up. And so this week has been dig a ramp down into the hole and play around in the mud and wallow in it.
Muck out 4 inches, add more money, yeah. Watch the homeowner's heartbeat just start racing financially.
It's been such a joy. Like it's one of those job sites where, especially the week of the rain, like you were calf deep in mud.
And all then, day. Like my hips, yeah, my toes.
You're just covered. You basically nasty. Have to strip to get in the car when yeah. you're heading home.
And I was then, so sore carrying pumps around.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And that's luckily Rick doesn't make me carry pumps around. He realizes I'm special enough that I don't carry pumps.
Hollywood!
Hollywood! Which we can't talk about that officially yet.
Well, I was just saying the way
yeah.
you work.
Well, yeah. So,
can't grab a shovel.
Just to tease that out a little bit for you guys, there is something going on behind the scenes that I am not allowed to talk about yet, but stay tuned on that one.
It's already going to his head.
Yeah. So I don't carry pumps anymore. That's right. The way it's going to be. But
if
yeah. So
if
we,
it ain't film time,
right. It's downtime. Yeah, absolutely. I got, you know, my union rep told mm-hmm. me I'm only allowed to do certain things. So, but all that being said, we spent last week mucking around, wallowing in mud. This week has been playing cleanup. So we did dig a ramp down into the basement, got all of the basically dog shit out. And start putting our stone down. But it's been an absolute treat these last couple of weeks.
Yeah, it's been a nightmare. But that's yeah. a can-do attitude.
Yeah, and we are
getting
it done. Yeah, we are getting it done. But, oh, my God, it's not been fun. So yeah, for today's topics, I basically threw some stuff together. The first thing I wanted to talk about is, as everyone's probably familiar in the dirt world, I know that we talked about this being a podcast for all the trades. Trust me, guys, we will get there. But initially here, we will stick within our comfort zone of the dirt world.
Right. We're going to break into insult and other change yeah. pretty damn yeah. quick. So,
but for the time being, you know, until we kind of get our legs under us here, we are going to stick close to home and things that we know about because that's the news I focus on. But Case released officially their 620B skid steer.
Yeah.
It is a 6,200 pound lift capacity machine. I want to say it weighs in at like... 15 or 16,000 pounds,
which is significant.
It is heavy.
That 450 will lift 5,000 with counterweights, and it only weighs in at 10.5.
Yeah. So this is a, I mean, it is a beefy machine. Now, that being said, we're going to watch the trailer here in just a second. They've got like a, I can't remember if it's a full yard and a quarter or
yard and a quarter.
Is it yard and a quarter? It's our, like,
it's a loader on tracks.
Yeah. It's a front, it's a freaking backhoe bucket.
That's America, though. We'll just build it bigger and better. Made in America.
Made in America. Yeah. And it burns diesel.
She sure does.
So that being said, I've got the official Case trailer pulled up here. We're gonna take a quick listen here, and we'll get Rick's thoughts on this.
He should have wore a hat.
And why am I not getting any audio now that I've got all this tested and we had everything dialed in here? Hang on, guys. I know why. Hang on. We're still rookies at this. Bear with us.
The compact track loader.
Hey.
Largest and most powerful CTL ever built.
Did they release the price point?
I don't think so. Because officially, it doesn't officially drop, I think,
We need to start by laying out what...
It's over 100 grand.
Oh, easy.
Yeah.
V620B.
120, I'd bet.
That would be my guess, yep.
Bucket it's and got a reversing fan.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they did a great job with it.
Feature standardization to this machine than you've ever seen in a
looks just
CTL.
Built.
It looks like a tank.
Adjustable electro-hydraulic controls. High flow hydraulics, auto ride control, one way self leveling, a hydraulic coupler, an auto reversing fan, LED lights, and a 1 year subscription to Case SightWatch Telematics.
Which no one cares about on a skid steer.
Nah, you turn it up a little more.
Yep. Heavy duty bucket designed specifically for the TV620B.
So let me go back there. Because I didn't catch that.
Comes with a new 1.25 cubic yard
one and a quarter. Bucket. That's unreal.
It's only 8 foot wide.
20B.
And just to kind of recap here, that is literally a backhoe bucket. That is, yeah. I mean, it's a skid steer bucket. It's got the low profile extended edge, but when you're talking capacity,
yeah,
that's a backhoe.
Well, you could carry 1.5 heaped up.
Yep.
You know, if you're not loading trucks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's all just, day. That thing is tank. I like those additional counterweights on the back, too. That's sexy.
Big, powerful, loaded with features. The industry has never seen anything like the TV620B. A few things for you to know about this machine.
Sounds
the
heavy.
TV620B also features all the great advantages we introduced with the B-Series compact track loaders, including a new operator interface, industry-leading...
I like where they put the hydraulics on the inside arms.
Yeah, yep, they're nice and protected, but they're open. You can get to them.
That includes the industry's only rear-view camera visible in a split-screen.
That's one of their best features on their machines now, is that screen.
This thing is built for the heavy work.
Yeah, but that screen is irrelevant about running that machine.
Rubber tracks
sure.
That allow for minimum ground...
But for a user interface, it's nice.
Performance on improved...
For a techie guy.
Yeah, I'm all about the tech.
I know. I like the counterweights aren't cheesy like the 450 was.
Right.
Hydraulic on demand performance that allows the operator to easily select the percentage of auxiliary hydraulic flow to the attachment.
So just to recap that, you can actually adjust your hydraulic flow in real time.
Right.
Now,
so like the stump grinders that were blown constantly, like overheating, you could adjust the high flow
down
just enough to keep it efficient.
Yeah. So that's now one thing I don't know. It doesn't look like from the screen here, the screen that they've got, which by the way, if you guys want to watch this video, head over to dieselandironproductions.com. We have a blog page set up for the podcast so that you can actually watch the videos that we are watching on the show here. But all that to say, on the screen here, it doesn't look like it actually has the ability to dial down by gallons per minute or gallons per hour. It looks like it is just a 0 to 100%. So I would say,
yeah, but
I don't
think
know what kind of flexibility they got.
If you're at like a 45 gallon per minute at a high flow at 100%, you could back it down to 80%, right?
And just you're just kind of doing some mental math.
38 gallons a minute, kind of.
But that seems like one thing that could potentially improve on is maybe actually having, even if it's not 100,000% accurate, put in some sort of gallon per minute there on the...
Via the machine's multifunction display, This allows the operator to dial in attachment performance to their preference.
The attachments look small.
They do. This machine is such a beast. This is a Fecon head they're running on this
thing.
Now,
this is a sweet
foot pedal.
You see it's programmable?
It's like the dozer.
Yeah.
Deceleration or the new trans mode, which reduces drive speed but retains RPM for little arm functions.
So just to recap for those listening, so your accelerator pedal, which it traditionally is in skid steers, your foot pedal on the floor. Most skid steers, that has traditionally just been a throttle pedal, so it's just like the gas pedal in your car. In this new machine, you can actually program that three ways. You can leave it the traditional accelerator pedal, you can change it over to a decelerator pedal, more like a dozer, or you can do it like a transmission control. And I've talked about this on my Diesel and Iron channel before. On a lot of dozers, you can set it to where full engine throttle, you're 100% on throttle all the time. You're only regulating your track speed with the pedal. And that's exactly how you can do with this machine.
And this thing still has a creep mode.
And it's got creep on top of that.
So, if you're running into some really heavy stuff that you want to slow down on, you hit that pedal, give the machine a little bit more time to mulch or grind or lift something up before you keep tracking.
Now, this is all one of these, in theory, that's great. It's a cool feature. But at the same time, I kind of feel like, you know, in a dozer, it's forward or reverse, and then your pedal is changing your speed. But in a skid steer, you're doing that with your hand. So this is kind of one of those features where I go, that's a really cool feature initially, because I literally just did. But at the same time, as I think through it, I go, okay, that's a cool feature, but super practical.
It needs some real-world testing.
It doesn't seem highly practical to me that you're going to be controlling your speed with the pedal versus with your hand.
A great complement to the standard creep speed. We meet emission standards through a combination of CEGR, DOC, and SCR technologies. We've got no DPF and no regeneration.
That's huge. No DPF, guys.
And the engine compartment is reduced with a standard.
That's awesome.
Is awesome. Reversible fan to blow out all the shit off your radiator up top.
How often the fan runs and for the duration within the multifunction display in the cab.
I gotta imagine with that size, horsepower, and pump set,
also features
that ain't gonna slow the machine down at all.
No, 114 horse.
And software updates through the site manager app, as well as connectivity to the Case Uptime Center for collaborative fleet management between Case, the local Case dealer, and the equipment owner. And the Case TV620B is manufactured proudly in Wichita, Kansas, USA. We promise you that you've never seen a CTL quite like this. For more on
So just a super quick tidbit of knowledge there. The guy that's doing this actually taught my training out in Pennsylvania.
Nice.
So when I was selling equipment for Case, he was one of the trainers that was out there. So this is a video. So, well, before we get into the next video,
I think it's a decent machine. It's really hard knowing that like the Minotaur's there to compare it to.
Yeah.
I think if it had a little more features, kind of like what the Minotaur hype is about.
Yeah.
Like that size machine for like what we do a lot of the times, it'd be nice to be able to clip a dozer blade on because it has the weight, the horsepower. You're going to be in a really unique situation buying that. Like you're going to be in some kind of specialty environment, I'd have to imagine, just because things so heavy. It's going to take bigger trucks, trailers, attachments to really get the performance out of the money.
Yeah. So just kind of piggybacking off of what you're saying, I think for the majority of contractors like you and I, of the two machines between this one and the Minotaur itself, I think the Minotaur makes way more sense because it gives you that flexibility. And if you're going to go drop, you know, let's do some just educated guesses.
You're looking at like the sister machine of the Minotaur, in my opinion, knowing that it's there. Like, you know, you could throw that dozer blade on the Minotaur. It's got scarifiers in the back. You could switch to metal tracks, rubber tracks, which I think you could do to a lot of skid steers.
Yeah, so you can do that. It's traditionally been third party, though.
But when you get looking at the price point, like a little bit more breakout force, that's really cool. A little more horsepower, hydraulic pump power. That's an overall feature, but, you know, you're looking for someone that's really big in attachments, which I run a lot of attachments.
But that's where I come back to where I was ultimately going to go with that is, so you've got this machine and let's call it, it's going to go for, and I think this is a pretty accurate guess. Let's say 120,000 versus your Minotaur with the dozer attachment, excuse me, you know, let's call that 150.
Correct.
You know, by the time you throw the dozer on and the Scarfire, I would think with for the majority of contractors, if you're going to step up into that next weight class where you're really committing to dragging around a triaxle trailer. And
correct.
I would think the Minotaur would almost be a better choice because you have
you got the flexibility. Machines.
Yeah, you do. You've got that real dozer blade versus correct. This machine. I'm kind of with you. I could see it being some very specialized niche contractors. You know, the one that they talk about constantly in their marketing and promotional materials is energy companies and municipalities that have a lot of right-of-ways that need to be cleared.
Right.
And so I can, I can see that. The other way I could see that rolling is instead of going and buying a little compact loader for your landscape yard, have this be one of your yard machines. Cause now you've got the hinge pin height, you've got the bucket capacity to where you're up there with a traditional compact loader, but now you've got the maneuverability of having a skid steer so that you can get in some really tight spots. You don't necessarily need the dozer blade. You just need that additional lift capacity for doing pallets of stone and some of the stuff that they encounter in the landscape yard. But as far as this being an on-site, you know, heavy duty skid that someone's going to go commit to, I think
when the Minotaur comes out, I think this is going to drop the ball. It's going to be one of the.
That's kind of. I feel like these sales are going
to
be pretty.
It's almost made the platform, but it stopped because you could go back to the 450 and then the Minotaur.
Yeah.
Like, unless there's some severe attachments that are coming out, we're not seeing for hydraulic.
Right. Right.
You know, that it's overkill.
Yeah. I think when you step up to this machine, I mean, 15,000 pounds is a heavy fucking machine to drag around. Yeah,
you go buy a used loader.
Yep.
30 grand. There's yeah. your pin height.
Yeah. And so I think there's initially going to be a pop of some of these machines of contractors just want to have a dick swinging contest. Like mm-hmm. I got the biggest, baddest. Outside of that, I think really guys are going to step up to that Minotaur or they're going to stay at that TV 450 range.
Yeah. Cause I mean, really, if you got the Minotaur and you're bulldozing quite a bit, I mean, you're almost more efficient to have a bulldozer and a skid steer, bulldozer and an excavator. So it's going to be a pretty hard sell for the 620.
Yeah. Yeah. No, nice I machine. Totally agree. It nice is a machine. Super nice machine, but that's kind of a strange machine to put out there. So, all right, for the next one, because Rick is a tree guy.
I love steel.
We have a steel jet-powered chainsaw. And again, dieselandironproductions.com, we will post this video for you guys to check
we're
out.
Here with steel-sponsored sport aircraft.
And I am going to turn this down a little because it is loud as shit when he fires this thing up.
A little steel bit on the side.
Well, to your heads. Yeah, check this out. Remember the little
this thing is badass.
He looks like he's caressing the saw.
Yeah.
They're available for model airplanes.
What the fuck?
Well, steel's working on a turbine.
I can't imagine how much fuel that goes through.
Steel chainsaw.
Like, this isn't practical at all. It's literally for publicity, but that is badass.
An ounce a minute. That's, maybe more.
You just walk around with a backpack of fuel on you.
That looks like a 461.
Dude, this thing is badass when he really fires it up. Okay. So I'm going to turn it down here because it gets loud.
It's a little bit louder than I thought now.
By the way, the chain has not even started on this thing. It hadn't even started spinning.
He's reading a little digital readout there. Reading his EGT.
There it goes.
Holy shit.
Yeah, that thing's badass.
You can do some serious work at idle.
Yeah.
I mean, that's coming out right at the perfect time. Halloween is around the corner.
There you go.
You know what
just
I mean?
Just chase guys around with one of these.
Legitly.
And scare the shit out of
right.
them. Right. Yeah.
Chainsaw okay, the with the turbo. Right.
Wow, it's so quiet. The blade, that is.
So yeah, that is the steel jet powered chainsaw.
I want to see them full tilt, put that into a log.
Well, that's what I was going
to
say.
Hang on to that sucker.
So traditionally, with a gas powered motor, you've got that oomph to really cut through the log when it comes into contact. I'd be curious to see how that. I would feel like that chain would bog.
That dude don't even have enough oomph on his body to hold the saw.
Right. Yeah. So. That's the other thing too. How heavy is that thing?
I bet she was probably right around. 40 pounds.
Think so?
Yeah.
I don't.
Which the kickback, dude, that thing can knock you back till tomorrow.
Oh, on the actual saw, yeah, not the jet powered version?
All of it. Like, yeah. If it grabbed a hold of a piece of wood and that thing come flying back at you at jet speed.
Yeah.
Yeah, you'd be dead.
I would be curious to see that go into a log. That would be pretty entertaining to watch. So what do we have going on over the next couple of weeks here, Rick?
The Paul Bunyan Show is actually happening in Cambridge, Ohio, the next 3 days, starting today.
Oh, is it really?
It's like the log-in, tree work kind of guru people, the newest of the new.
Gotcha.
Hammerhead Attachments would be there.
Oh, would they really?
Mm-hmm. I'm not making a five-hour hike.
Yeah, that's, no.
I can YouTube it.
Which there's the Utility Expo, or I can't remember what's happening.
Yeah, Utility Expo's running. Yeah,
that's going on. Where is that at this year? Kentucky?
I think so.
So.
But that's utility work.
I know.
You know? That's like consumer energy bullshit.
Well, yeah, and it's, yeah, that would
Union
be
jobs.
That would be a long hike to get down there to go to that. But I know Case has got a booth set up there, and they've got one of these 620s sitting in it.
Ooh.
I've been seeing some snippets of the show. I'm a little,
ooh,
at Case, honestly.
They dropped the ball.
Yeah, like reach out, for like, God's sakes.
For some odd reason, I really enjoy Case equipment. I really enjoy it from like way back in the day to now. And it's like, it's always just so close when you drop the ball. But for some odd reason.
You done messed up, A.A. Ron!
All day long.
Yeah, like that's Case in a nutshell.
But the price point, the machines, they're for me, they're just phenomenal. I really, yeah. The comfort in them. But yeah, they just dropped the ball.
Like, yeah, that was my biggest beef. So
I feel like we should be on Case's payroll. Demoing their machines to help them get to the final finish line of the fucking machine. Like,
yeah.
You're 99% there. That's good enough.
Yeah. Like, it's been so frustrating. So over on Diesel and Iron, the actual YouTube channel, and especially on our vlog page, Diesel and Iron Construction Vlog. If you search that, I know it's goofy, but that was for search engine optimization. That was the name. But you'll see Rick and I run Case equipment all the time. And I am affectionately called a Case sellout by a lot of my subscribers. And really, I never went into it as a no. wanting to be a Case fan. Like I went in and sold Case equipment because that's who hired me. And I had the common mentality of, you know, Case stood for can't afford something else.
Right.
And it was kind of the,
they're like the fourth on the list.
Yeah. The like cheaper kind of, not quite off brand, but you know, the cheaper brand. And what ended up happening is I totally changed my tune about Case equipment. It's just, they have got really solid machines. And unfortunately they do a piss poor job of marketing them. And like they have done nothing to address this whole can't.
Why are you the way that you are?
Yeah, like, well, yeah, exactly. Like pull your heads out of your asses and actually go address the fact that the industry thinks you're second rate.
Yeah.
You're a second rate manufacturer, second tier manufacturer. And so
they're competing at the level. If they would just finish.
Yeah.
Like they are competing right there with John Deere and Cat.
Absolutely.
And actually, I would put Cat, Case, and John Deere, in my opinion, from running equipment these days. Just Cat's run away with the technology.
Yep.
But they're a big boy standard. Like, if I bought a machine there and I took it to the dealer, it'd sit there for a month.
Yeah.
You know, if John Deere, they wouldn't even give me the time of day to buy a machine. I didn't have enough money for that salesman to talk right away. Like, I think they're very open to the smaller contractors.
And oh, that's
I
their bread
think
and butter.
Their price points are phenomenal and the comfort. The
yeah.
comfort of these machines, like I dig, you could throw on it. You know, you start looking at the other versatilities that the other tech guys are coming out in this field. It pairs up great with what they have going on because they don't really have nobody.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of phenomenal operators out there that if you paired them with this at the right price point and you added a little bit of technology to it, like Leica,
yep.
just something,
yep.
you know. And you could have paired up with Trimble.
Yep.
You know, so there's a lot of things you could run with.
Which that's a great point of just how poor of a job they've done to market. So Case, the vast majority of their dozers coming out of the factory right now have a harness. They are pre-wired for machine control.
Right.
But not just Leica. It comes with a universal harness so they can accept Leica, Trimble, or Topcon.
Right.
No one talks about that.
And coming from a man that's been in a bulldozer quite a bit, you and I, dude, they push.
Yeah,
they're
they
comfort.
Do. The Case dozers are hands down, in my opinion, Case dozers, you put it head to head with anybody else's of the same weight class, that case is going to outpush.
But again, they got to quiet the cab.
They do. That it, yeah. Again and again.
Dropping the ball.
Why are you the way that you are?
Case, you're 95% there with that dozer. Like, it's so, it's the machine. But the cab is ungodly loud. Like,
if
loud.
You want to ask you or I a question about a Case machine, I will tell you the best features about it, and then I'm not afraid to just say, but.
But. There's this is, always a but.
This is right here. This is right there.
That's what she said.
You know.
It never gets old.
It doesn't.
I love that sound effect. but yeah, that's, I mean, just all across the board with all of their equipment, it's that way. You're 95, 98% of the way there, but that last 2 to 5% is big enough that it is a hurdle for guys. That when I say that cab is loud on those case dozers, we had a brand new, like, plastic on the seat 1150, and the fucker was so loud I couldn't listen to the radio in the cab
right.
without blasting the radio. And
so excited to the run it.
Yeah, and it's like, why? You had
put earplugs in to run the damn
it's
thing.
It's like, why? Why would you not spend the time?
But look at the backhoe. Look how much time they have put into the backhoe. And the quality, like, it's the preferred machine out there as a backhoe. You know, why don't you finish everything else like you did that? Like,
absolutely.
That was the go-to backhoe. Everyone would have Cat and John Deere, everything.
Except for the backhoe.
Backhoe's a case.
Backhoe's a case, yep.
Why don't you finish everything else?
Yeah. Yep.
You know what I mean? So.
It was, that was by far the most frustrating thing selling case equipment was the fact that, first of all, the equipment was just right there. I mean, just right there at just being the perfect piece of equipment. And then the second thing was just the total lack of any marketing sense, which, you know, to kind of circle this back to what we originally talked about, Rick and I run Case all the time. You see it all over, plastered on the YouTube channel. I have reached out to Case multiple times. I reached out to my old rep who recognized the value in what we were doing. He reached out to the marketing side of Case. And we still, 8 months, 10 months later, have not heard a single chirp. And I have insider information that they have been following our channel. They've been watching the channel. They know about our content. Still.
You done messed up, A-Rod!
Yeah, like, just reach out and let us, like, start. Like, that would talk about a great way to promote not only the Minotaur, but the new 620, the B-series.
Why don't you ask some people out in the field with some severe experience, not like the engineers, like, you know, bigger is better.
Right.
Let's build this son of a bitch.
Right.
It's going to sell. Like, let's not get the real perspective of some real people out there going, we have the 450. We got the Minotaur. Is there a gap?
Well, I can tell you right now why they came out with that 620. It is the Minotaur without the Minotaur bells and whistles.
I mean, it's the Minotaur.
Yeah, it's the same frame. It's going to be the same. I guarantee you it's the same track frame.
But they'll push that 620 out in production before the Minotaur because they're basically taking a 450, beefing it up a little bigger. Because that whole actually track undercarriage is completely different rebuilt.
Yeah, it's, I noticed that.
I think it's got the pivoting thing like Cat does.
Yep, exactly. It's got the ability to pivot.
Suspension or whatever. Yep. There can't be much suspension on a skid steer.
No.
Besides your ass cheeks and the air seat.
That's it. Ass cheeks and air seat, baby.
But yeah, they dropped the ball. It's sad.
I know.
Just reach out.
It is what it is. Yeah, and that's where I just go, like, what a phenomenal way to promote these new products. You know, the B Series, they totally killed themselves with the Alpha Series skid steer. So for those of you not familiar, the last iteration of the skid steer before the one that is out now, the B Series, they were referred to as the Alpha Series. And it was where Case totally revamped. They totally redid them. This is where Case really stepped into the game of, you know,
they leaned into the problems.
Well, what they did is they kind of, that was them coming into this world of electronic over hydraulic controls and computerization with all of the engine modules. And it was their first modern skid steer that they put out. It was the first one that they revamped, and it was the modern skid. And they released that with a fuckload of problems because they wanted to rush it to market. It was more important to them to get it to market than it was to actually address the issues. And so what happened is for like 5 or 6 years, they ran with this Alpha Series piece of junk skid steer, and they just kind of like piece worked all of the issues
turmoil
that they had. Yeah,
everywhere.
I mean, it was just, And they soiled their reputation because Case back in the day was known for their skid steers. You had the old 1845s, which I bet 80% of the people listening to the podcast right now, if I say Case 1845, everyone's like, fuck yeah, that's an awesome skid. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like that was their reputation. And then they soiled it with the Alpha Series skids. And then they finally have kind of fixed all the issues and they came out with the updated B Series skids. And they've, outside of the YouTube channel, their Case Proper's YouTube channel, like, where have you really heard about them?
I think we're just going to start shipping our podcast and YouTube content. Yeah, to just they got email sick them of
every
it.
Day.
And they're like, holy shit, dude, these just guys are legitly page. Going around the world saying what's wrong and what needs to happen. Let's just call them up.
Yeah, let's just every day we'll go to the contact me page.
We're going to do it.
Yeah, that's and we'll ship them a link to every podcast, every video we put out.
And if you don't like it,
these nuts
are for you.
Got him.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so enough Case talk. Not that I have another topic to go to, but I feel like we're gonna bore people.
We're winding down now.
What's that?
I mean, the season's starting to wind down for the dirt guys. So this is where we're going to start gaining quite a bit of people listening to the podcast, some Diesel and Iron YouTube. The Mad Rush is here. Like, if you're a homeowner calling for services this year, you're scrambling to get it in because of next year. You're fighting the weather, the rain.
Yeah.
Guys are already gearing up for snow plowing. So the Midnight Warriors are, you know, buying Red Bull and getting ready to roll.
All
man,
about the
fixing
drink.
The trucks and the plows. Like, that's what's happening here in Michigan.
That's the other person we need to reach out to for the show.
Buttoning everything up.
We got to get Monster to sponsor the show. With how much we talk about energy drinks and Monster.
Who gives a shit? What about Red Bull?
No,
Red Bull's got an airplane.
Red Bull, that does stunts. Red Bull, yeah, exactly. Red Bull is like the snooty, wannabe hardcore, like extreme sport guys.
Yeah, but listen, man.
Monster is the drink of the people.
You see how big those Monsters are. You see how small that Red Bull is. And my work is way more efficient than yours because
that's a lie. Everyone,
you're drinking this you big Monster, lie. And I'm drinking this little Red Bull. After like 10 sips, I'm gone. You still got the pinky up in the air like you're drinking some hot tea.
You know their phrase. Their phrase is Red Bull gives you wings. You know what else has wings? Maxi
Angels.
Pads.
Maxi pads. Oh, my Lord. That's,
that's
embarrassing.
Yeah. Yeah. So who's drinking the manly drink here?
You know, at least I'm not the one running around with a mampon in all day long. You know, can you give me a Monster?
Yeah, exactly. And it's got to be the white Monster.
That's right.
That's the other thing about Monster. I mean, Red Bull gives you how many options? Like big can, little can. But Monster, you've got, do you want your regular traditional Monster? Do you want your sugar-free Monster? Do you want Monster with a little fruit punch? Do you want... We have 50 varieties.
There's
of
too
Monster.
Many options. There's too many
love
options.
We are a world of options these days, Rick. You can't just be. Wow. You just can't be stuck in one rut. You gotta branch out.
So I went to the gas station yesterday.
Yep.
And it was a big fucking iPad that I swiped my card on, and then I was like doing the touchscreen like a big tablet iPad. It was unreal.
Yeah. So just so you guys are aware, when it comes to technology, Rick is we're a little beyond the Stone
Age. I'm above
age.
The flip phone.
Yeah.
But these new phones.
Yeah, like with all of the podcasting stuff that we're messing with right now, it's blown Rick's mind.
Dude, I got to watch it. Like, I got the Square apps and shit on there, and I got people's info because the app starts.
Oh, yeah.
Stores it all.
Yep.
And next thing you know, like, I'll hear my phone do something, I'll look down, and it's like getting ready to charge some customer like $8,000 fucking on them. Whoa, lock this thing up.
Calm down, calm down.
Thankfully, no one I've had to issue a refund yet. But yeah, this technology is like wild.
Yeah. So we, even with the GoPros,
like, but I'm an Amazon king now.
Oh, I meant to yell at you the other day.
Oh, no.
So with the GoPros, I've been having a kind of, we've been working with Rick. We gave him training wheels. I kind of gave him the rundown on how to push the big red circle, and that's record.
Hey, it's skill set for skill set, baby. You're teaching me technical, and I'm teaching you seat
time. That's right.
Seat time and knowledge.
We got them all dialed in with the GoPros. I've got two GoPros, but then I've also got an audio recorder. And you left the audio recorder running for like 2 hours the other day.
But you still caught it to sync with the GoPro?
Oh, yeah.
Well,
so
then
we'll
fucking
have it.
Who
but
cares,
then we've got
dude?
Like an hour and a half of
who
extra.
Cares? Who cares, dude? Like, That's for you to figure out.
Yeah. So
you're just lucky that the film got fucking turned on.
That's right.
And I was doing my job.
You almost knocked that water over. And that would have been,
who cares?
That would have been a tragedy.
It's just tech shit. Yeah. Like, no one cares.
We're sitting here with like $1,500 worth of shit
content.
On it.
They want podcasting. They don't care about your shit all over my desk.
Yeah, right.
You know?
So, all right, guys, we're going to be right back. Give us just a quick second. All right, guys, welcome back. And I do apologize for that brief interruption there, but just a nice little laughable moment. Rick and I have actually been recording the second segment of this podcast for probably 10 minutes now before I looked over to realize that we weren't actually recording. So.
The fucking tech guy dropped the ball, dude.
And we had some really good shit in there, too.
Yeah. This keyboard needs a fucking key that you put in and turn on, dude. This is bullshit.
And it's the best part about it, really salt in the wound, is how we just gave Rick shit for not knowing anything about technology. And
bam!
You done messed up, Aaron!
That's right,
my bad. It's my bad. So what?
Thick skin. You got thick skin.
Yeah, there you go.
All right.
So to kind of rehash our conversation, what we were talking about is we're coming into fall now in the dirt world.
Cider and donuts.
I mean, that's especially up here in Michigan. We get super excited about cider.
Do you know cider mills are like basically just a Michigan thing?
I knew they weren't in the South. Like before I came up here to Michigan, I didn't know shit about cider mills.
Nothing good comes from the South, but if you haven't noticed.
Racism. I mean? I think it's pretty prominent.
We ain't got to go there.
Yeah. So
cider donuts,
keep it between the straight and narrow. But yeah, it's cider and donuts is like one of the exciting things about fall. And then on top of that, like my favorite thing.
Hoodie and jeans,
yeah. Man. You get that crisp weather in the mornings. And it's just like you get to work outside and just in a hoodie. It's comfortable. You're not sweating. Love it.
It's still cold enough where you wear gloves, but you keep your summer clothes in the car just in case like the sun peels out for like 4 hours.
So now we're in, especially in Michigan, you keep a set of summer clothes, but you also keep your Carhartts because within a 45-minute span, you could go from summer weather to needing the Carhartts.
You're almost with the tube heaters on the dozer to stand in front of the radiators with the coat open. This is the time.
Yes. So one of the things that comes along, especially here in Michigan, because of, being surrounded by the Great Lakes, fall means rainy season too. And what Rick and I were talking about is the rainy season, the muddy season is where skill really starts to come into play. Experience really starts to come into play on the job site in order to stay productive. And so just kind of expound on that. When you were talking through that, what are some of the things where experience comes into play? What?
You son of a bitch.
We already
mud
went through this.
Season, man. Mud season is here. This is where the experience really starts coming out, from the greenhorns to a guy with 5 years to 25 years. The old timers that know, that been around through multiple seasons. I mean, you're talking a bunch of rain. You know, you're constantly looking at the phone, checking the weather right now, because up here in Michigan, our weather guys are so accurate that we will get a fucking forecast to say 2 weeks of sunshine, 75 degrees, and you pull up another app by the hour, and it says rain in 45 minutes. Yeah. So you're constantly gauging it throughout the day. I mean, the site right now is, this is like what will make and break a job.
Yeah.
You know, this will go from basically letting a greenhorn out on a job that doesn't know nothing about rain to throwing spoil piles everywhere to all of a sudden it diverts the water onto the job the wrong way and you're screwed. I mean, you're looking to keep the water shed. You're starting to keep your ditches open, your storm water, anything, your silt fence up. I mean, anything that you used to put off in the summertime just became super important now, because if you don't keep your job site drained, prepped for water,
you're sunk, quite literally.
Like, look at the job that we've been screwing around with now. The drainage isn't quite there yet because of the way the job has to go. But we got the ditches in, we got stone everywhere to get the trucks in. We're prepped for the rain the best that we can that the job allows. But you're basically to the point now, if you don't prep for the rain, it could shut your job site down for a week to dry out. And right now, it could be 3 days of rain sporadically throughout the week. So if you keep it prepped and the water drains, I mean, you could work possibly tomorrow by 1 o'clock. And, you know, this is where you start getting like 3 hours in, 10 hours in, 8 hours. Like, it's so random.
Yeah.
This is where, you know, the sweat equity of being in the trenches and the years of seat time of dealing with the mud, because you're dragging everything around now.
Yeah.
You know, you're watching your labor that maybe he's young or he's old or a lot of experience or not. You know, you could run the guy in the ground. So you're basically, if you're like in an excavator or loader, you're starting to take the extra steps to carry the tools and like the bricks and the lasers and stuff like that for these guys that are stomping through the mud, you know. You know, for example, like you're doing a storm trench, you're throwing some sump lines or whatever, and you know, it just rained. Like you could do certain things when it's raining.
Right.
Like you don't just stop, but you can't finish grading in the rain, right?
Right.
So you could dig a trench with a foot of water on top, scraping all the muck out, building kind of like barriers around a trench to keep your guy dry and still productively do a job efficiently. But yet, you know, on the machine now, you just come like kind of like ice skates, throwing mud around, slipping and sliding, just keeping everything dry, keeping everything moving. I mean, it's a nightmare right now for guys in the industry. The weather's great, and if the weather holds out and we get an Indian fall, it's phenomenal. But this is where, I mean, it's night and day. You go to finish grade and, you know, when to touch it, when not to touch it.
Yeah. And that's, you know, there's a couple areas that really come to mind when it comes to the experience and dealing with the wet season. So one of the big ones when I was new to the industry, you know, the golden rule is you don't fuck with finish grade whatsoever.
No.
And so, especially as a new guy, you take that so much to heart that when it gets into this area of the season, you're not going to touch that finish grade, are you? You're not going to touch that finish grade. And instead, it's one of those things where, okay, when you look at it from a production standpoint, excuse me, you can either not touch the finish grade and wait a week for that fucker to dry, which is going to cost you a fair amount of money, especially when, you know, now that we're in the fall, you're getting into crunch time on the projects, or you get out there and you muck out 3, 4, or 5 inches and just use a little extra stone. Yeah, right. Your costs on stone went up a little bit, but when you compare it to what you're going to have to spend in either delays or manpower that's going someplace else that it should be used here, you know, knowing when and how to make that call is one of the biggest things that pops up in my mind when it comes to experience, especially at the foreman superintendent level.
Well, I was just going to say, that's when the big boy bucks, everyone wants to make the big bucks come. You know, they want the big paychecks, the hourly rate, the big salaries.
Right.
This is when you see those dollars really come to work, you know, because you still got a whole job to complete before December, before the first deadline. So, you know, they're coordinating for trucks. You still got to keep material coming in and out, mud or no mud, rain or no rain, to now you're extra baling material and pushing material to the road, because if you have a paved road or a gravel road, you can still load trucks.
Right.
You know, so yeah, you're wasting a little bit of time and fuel and hourly wage, but overall, you're still keeping the dollars turning, you're keeping the productivity rate up. So you can't have a this day sucks and like a die attitude. You got to have a can do attitude, and you can't really take no as an option. So this is where guys in the trade as a whole, not just the dirt guys, like we're innovators, you know, you don't just read about this and learn. Like, this is like educated decisions that you learn through experience, and nobody could teach you but seat time, being on the job, going through the gauntlet of sweat and the grime and just everything
right
about it. Like, this is it right here, you know. This is what's going to make and break dirt season.
So a couple things just came to mind as you were kind of walking through that. So first of all, another area that really comes to mind when it comes to experience working in the mud and everything is you touched on it with knowing when to finish grade, knowing, and not even just with finish grades, in all honesty, knowing when you can salvage a situation is really when experience starts to play in. So, you know, let's stick with finish grades. you can go out there with some snot on a finish grade, and if you know what you're doing, you know how to generate some dry material, you know how to work that material in with the wet stuff, you can still get away with doing some sort of a finish grade in certain situations.
Correct.
But all of that comes with experience and having done it. And, you know, now instead of me sitting at home for 3 days, because I've got that experience, I'm able to go out there and actually make something out of my day. I'm actually able to be productive and go make money.
Yes.
And so that's a big area that plays in. Another thing you just touched on, and I really want to circle back to it because it's so important, is as guys in the trades, one of the things we don't talk about, how do I want to say this? We don't talk about it in a direct enough manner. We all know that being in the trades is difficult. Like this is not an easy life choice. Like no. Your career path, there are easier, cushier jobs that you could have.
Yeah, there's no amounts of training that's going to prep you for construction.
Absolutely.
Being in the trades, it's not like we're going to give you a 4-year crash course. I mean, it's hands on.
It is.
You know, from everything that you're out learning on.
Well, and where I wanted to go with it is one of the things we don't talk about and in a direct way is like the mental strength you have to have, the mental fortitude to go out in these sort of conditions. And you can absolutely approach the day, you know, this last week is a prime example. You can approach the day and go, I don't want to fucking be here. This is going to be miserable. And you will spend the entire day miserable. You will want to quit your job. You will hate what you're doing. Or this is where the mental toughness comes in. You go in and go, look, this is what we've got to accomplish and this is how we got to do it. And yeah, it sucks, but that, you know, that's where we're at in the year. This is just part of the job. And I think I do feel like, you know, we've talked about it in multiple instances, this generational gap between the old timers and the new kids. And I do think that plays into a lot of the younger generation coming out on these job sites and deciding this isn't something they want to do. It's not that they're not capable.
They're capable.
They're perfectly capable. It's just, I want to say they've just never really been tested in the way that the trades tests you. And if you're not prepared for that test, it's really easy to go, this ain't for me.
Well, it's like what I get into a lot. We get into a lot of versatile jobs.
Yep.
You know, success is an attitude. It's not just a skill set. Like right. I could take a C labor or a C operator if you were grading them out from A being great to C being like better than my school grades were, you know?
Right.
If they got a great attitude, I could go get a job done. You know, I could accomplish something. Now, I could take a phenomenal operator, phenomenal labor, and if they have just like the piss poor attitude, they're be as half as productive, yeah. And it sucks. It's freaking miserable. Like, we don't talk about it, but stomping the mud sucks. Shoveling yep. the track sucks. Grabbing the tools with the mud on it. Like, yep. it just sucks.
Like, getting in your car with the bottom half of your pants weighing 15 pounds because they are totally caked in mud, knowing that you're going to have to... Like, that. Literally, when I got home all last week, the first thing I did was standing outside in the cold, in the rain.
Rinsing
off in the hose that's cold as shit because we got a well.
Yeah.
That's how you come home and spend the first 20 minutes of your day
and it's miserable.
At home.
It's miserable. It's miserable. Cold. Yeah, you can't get warmed up now if you get the chills in your
100%.
Body. 100%. I always carry like a second pair of clothes in the truck now. I'm to the point I'll strip down into the boxers, throw everything in a bag or in the back of the truck and take it home. Like, you got to do what you got to do.
It's about getting the job done.
Yeah.
And yeah, so that's, like I said, that's one thing we just... Everyone acknowledges the trades are difficult, but no one really talks about like how much mental strength this industry, like you don't have to be, it's helpful to be physically strong in this industry just because there is some manual labor. But at the end of the day, it's not the physical strength that makes or breaks you in this industry. It's the mental strength.
Well, like here in Michigan, we make all our money in 8 months.
Yep.
Right. You got mud season, summer,
mud season,
winter.
Yep.
So for a guy in the excavating field, he's going to start April-ish and work all the way up to maybe November 15th without like not missing a beat in overtime.
Right.
So you just know you have to hack these hours dark to dark. You're going to be away from the family
6 to 7 days a week.
Right. I mean, it's miserable. And then all of a sudden, boom, hopefully if you saved up enough money, you didn't live over your means, that you could take the layoff, collect unemployment and enjoy yourself and the family, maybe go down to Florida and travel a little bit. But I mean, that's the real life of a guy in the dirt field. It's seasonal. So you work 6 days a week and you work
hard,
80, 100 hours. I mean, it's plus your drive time.
Yep.
I mean, the job's not like you just go 15 minutes down the road every day. It moves.
It's 45 minutes to an hour, sometimes hour and a half each way.
Yeah.
Like, that's a substantial. That's the other thing people don't talk about is you work 12 to 14 hours a day.
That's not including
the 2 to 3 hours of drive time you have right every
now,
day.
Right now, you know, you start getting, let's say, a 10-hour, 12-hour window of daylight. So that means you're leaving in dark.
Yep.
You're on the job starting at daylight. You know, you already had the machines running.
Oh, we were greasing in the dark.
Right.
Yeah.
Daylight when you could see you're full throttle, dude.
Yep.
So but that's fall. I mean, in a nutshell, up here, like sometimes we have phenomenal t-shirt, hoodie, jeans, and you get like 30 days, maybe 45 days of phenomenal weather, and it's awesome. But it's the end of the season for us up here, moving dirt, basically onto tedious jobs, you know, big pipe jobs, and development will still go. But that's really it, man. We're gonna transition into snow plowing here. And
No. Let's be specific. We are not. People in Michigan.
Well, is in the construction field, like, you either have two options.
You will not go plow snow again.
You're either moving big jobs, but honestly, like, the guys now, they're starting to, with the experience, the estimators, project managers, owners, they're starting to stage or as they wrap stuff up for frost season. They're already staging for the winter months. Like, what jobs can we do? What jobs are sandy versus clay? So if we have to rip some ground, like, these are all the stuff everyone's prepping for 5-6 months down the road as our guys are dealing with mud season, rain, being productive, earning their paychecks.
And I can tell you on the equipment dealership side, generally by the second week in August, all of your winter loader rentals are spoken for. If you're a contractor listening to this,
the yards are gone. Yeah, they're empty now.
You haven't, even if the loaders are sitting, because a lot of times they would sit for another month or two in the yard, but all of them are spoken for. And so if you are a contractor listening to this and you haven't dabbled in the snow world yet, or you are planning to maybe next year, know that if you want to line out any rental loaders for winter, you got to be having those conversations. Oh yeah, that's 100% going to be your attitude when you walk into the dealership and they're like, sorry, bud, these have all been spoken for a month. So, but that's
they start bidding work in June.
Oh, up absolutely.
Here in Michigan for snow.
And then
they're
locked
in September.
By going late July, early August, yeah. You already have your contracts. You already have your rentals lined up. It's all set.
Yeah.
And then we would generally start shipping out our loaders probably mid to late October, early November. And then they would go sit on those lots. So that's a whole other aspect of this industry is gearing up for plow season, because so many contractors up here in the north, that's how they make it through the winter.
Oh yeah. And that's how you keep your guys around, you know.
Yep.
They're gonna have to push these. They go from working these crazy insane hours dark to dark to, you know, your telephone rings at midnight and goes, hey, you gotta get out there and start pushing snow till 6 AM in the morning. Sometimes it's an all day storm to
36 hours. Absolutely.
Like, oh shit, now that everyone's jacked up on Red Bull.
Yep.
You know,
monster,
and not sleeping in their car. You know, it takes two monsters to a Red Bull to get the job done, but
yeah,
they'll plow that parking lot. So I think that's about it for this episode.
Yeah, we can wrap this one up. We got about, I don't know, 40-ish minutes, 50 yeah. minutes. Yeah, that's pretty good.
Yeah, it's not bad. I hope you guys enjoyed. Come back for the next one.
Yeah, so we'll catch you guys on the next episode of Sweat and Grime. Thanks for listening, guys.